the corner of Broadway and Battery. Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, and Matt Kolsky. Broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
All right. Welcome. Listen to that. New song. I like it an awful lot. Rebranded. Are the 49ers rebranded? I don't know if I'm going to go that far, but you know what? I'm going to officially upgrade them from that's bad to that's competent. I don't know if they're good yet. We'll find out soon. Welcome. It's good to have you here. What an interesting weekend of football. Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky. Guys, welcome. Hello. We officially got a new show here.
Yeah, and I'm going to get out over my skis on the Niner thing and say we got a new Niners, too.
Why not? It feels like for every step forward, there's at least a half step backwards, and the injury to Joe Staley is just enough to probably calm down Ray's Super Bowl aspirations. I'm sure you had them in the big game after the 2-0 start on the road, Ray.
No, but I can't really dog them because, A, I didn't think they would win both games, and I didn't think that Cincinnati would be beaten as severely as I thought they'd be competent. I thought they'd be competitive. And the 49ers basically took that out of them. This was not as much an example of, wow, Cincinnati's bad as it was. 49ers have some legs here. And what it does is it pushes back the day of reckoning for them at least a few more weeks before we could say this is who they are and this is who they aren't, because their next opponent looks, at least on the surface, to be even weaker than the Bengals does.
Yeah, and for me, the distinction between a win like week one and a win like yesterday is important. And when there's a win like yesterday, I do change the way I see this team. My expectations change based on what I saw yesterday. Because as Ray said, that was not just getting by another bad team, which frankly, for a team in the Niners situation, just two road wins, no matter who they're against, no matter what they look like, to start a season would have been great. But to go in and look not just competent, but they did look really good yesterday in every phase of the game. Few mistakes and a lot of really, really good execution. That's what a good football team looks like. And frankly, I don't know that they get a true test of that until week six. So let's just assume it's the real thing.
It's best fourth quarters of football since Kyle Shanahan got hired. Yes?
Yeah.
I mean, without hesitation, yes. Is that an easy yes?
It's a fairly, I mean, it's, I'd
it's
have
a low
to think
bar
about
to clear.
It is a low bar to clear, but losing Staley puts an asterisk on it. And Robbie Gould shamelessly missing a field goal also damages this victory somewhat.
And there was a probably want that back interception from Jimmy
terrible.
Garoppolo.
Just terrible.
And
I think at some point, I don't mean to interrupt, I apologize, but at some point you're going to have to accept the fact that he's good for one of those every week.
I think so.
That's who he is.
I think that's part of the deal.
It's part of the experience.
You
but
sign
if,
up for him. If you don't want him to throw interceptions, then just have him be Alex Smith. He can do that.
Well, I don't. I'm fine with this.
I'm not saying
I know you're not.
Not.
But I think the performance you saw yesterday, yeah, that's a that. If that's an average 49er offensive performance, they're in really good shape, and I think that's about right.
I don't think it's going to be an average. I think that's going to be a well above average because, again, while I don't want to dismiss how they looked, there is a part of me that says, boy, Cincinnati didn't tackle very many people with very much verve at all. I mean, from the start, they were getting gashed.
When I say,
and I don't believe that there are a lot of teams that are that pliant.
Yeah,
and there's the Dolphins, and then there's everybody else.
When I say average, I just mean no one in the wide receiver core played crazy out of their minds. It wasn't Kittle for 200 yards. It wasn't, you know, crazy stuff happening. It looked like a normal football game where one team was a lot better than the other, and we haven't seen the Niners be the better team in that game in years.
Speaking of one team being a lot better than the other, certainly Kansas City fit that bill yesterday. But I'll tell you, the Raiders are a better football team today than at any other point in time in last year, and that's even with that embarrassing second quarter and a thumping that they took at the hands of a very good Kansas City team. We'll get into that a little bit later. The numbers that mattered most for the 49ers, again, average day, it's going to be tough to make this, 572 yards. It's the most prolific day of offense in 7 years. I think I saw Matt Barrows write up in The Athletic that it's the fifth most offense generated in team history.
Wow.
That's an awful lot. Yesterday, it would appear that their running game was among the elite running games in all of football. The fact that their passing game had such a gaudy, beautiful afternoon without George Kittle being heavily involved in the passing game. He blocked his rear end off and was a huge part of the running game success. But Kittle, only 3 catches, 54 yards, and it was a prolific day of passing where wide receivers were involved. All but one, that is. Even though his snap count went way up, Dante Pettis not targeted once, not targeted in a blowout, not targeted on a day where guys were running free and clear of defenders. I don't want to start with what was wrong on a day that went so right. But I thought, as good of an afternoon as it was for the 49ers team on the whole, it was a bad afternoon individually for Dante Pettis. And unfortunately, Solomon Thomas gets sliced with another. Wasn't the game that you needed, man. Wasn't the game that you needed.
And if these guys, if the team continues to play well and they are either uninvolved or negatives, you're just going to run out of opportunities. You're not going to keep getting opportunities. It's fine the last 2-3 years if you're not succeeding because we want to get a look at you. Keep trotting out there. We want to see what it looks like. We're hoping you develop. If you're playing well and you have guys who are executing, those two dudes won't be on the field.
Right. Starters used to not be able to worry about the guys behind them executing because the black hole, the depth chart was a black hole where talent went to die. So if you didn't get this week, Pierre Garçon, don't worry. You have until you're injured to figure it out. And that's literally the only reason why he was pulled off the field. There was no one threatening him, so they gave him until a career-ending neck injury to figure it out, and he never quite figured it out. Now all of a sudden, you got undrafted, seventh-round dudes making plays in front of a guy that they traded up for.
The fact that he had 35 snaps tells me that Shanahan hasn't abandoned the notion yet.
No.
But the fact that he wasn't targeted suggests to me that Garoppolo doesn't believe in him. And that's a different thing. Because if Shanahan didn't believe in him, you wouldn't see him. I think the fact is Shanahan is less convinced about Pettis' inability to contribute than Garoppolo is. And maybe next week against Pittsburgh is the last stand, because after that it's the bye week and things start to get cemented after a bye week. Guys, teams make choices that they're going to stick with. So I think while Pettis hasn't run out of time, he can see 0-0 on the clock from where he's standing.
Some very interesting stuff to get into today. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're going to be taking your calls, and we're going to be taking calls from up in Sacramento as well, just here in the Bay Area. We want to welcome ESPN 1320 in Sacramento, which is now simulcasting the Damon Ratto and Kolsky show here. It's great to have you guys aboard. Thank you very much. Who's the board op up there? I feel like we should welcome this person to the family. Because this person
can't respond. He's chained to the chair.
It might not be a guy. Charlie, pay close attention. We haven't figured out quite what our just pay attention, Charlie. It's a big day to pay attention. Things could go wrong. They usually do. Look, we got a really, really, really interesting show today. Like I said, Alex Boone is joining us to talk about offensive line play, and we got offensive line play to worry about with Joe Staley's injury, how the 49ers played this injury, the aggressiveness which Shanahan and Lynch decide to solve this with is going to be one of the more fascinating topics of the entire season. Is it the fork in the road of the season? It might be. I don't know. We've got some really interesting stuff to get into. The next challenge that the 49ers have is playing with a level of expectation. We will define what is realistic, what is unrealistic. It's an overreaction Monday. It's a monster Monday, brought to you by Benjamin Moore Paints. Paint like no other. We got a great show for you today, 888-957-9570. And unfortunately, we got just a little bit of musical mourning to do. The weekend started with losing Eddie Money, and it ended with losing Rick Ocasek of the Cars. I mean, that's, you want to talk about classic rock soundtrack of your life radio. God, we got to talk about that a little bit today. Like, when you talk about the perfect pop song, like the Cars have like 12 of those. I mean, they were a prolifically good band.
I don't know how prolific they were. I think they had three really good albums, and then
that's good.
Not
three really good songs. Three really good albums. That's good.
Okay, it's better, way better than average. But then Ocasek gets into the spat with Benjamin Orr. The band starts to splinter, and all of a sudden, it's not the same band. It's not close. I think after about three albums, they were played out.
Fair enough. And they could have been
better for longer.
I said pop music, which normally doesn't have a three-album run in most any pop band. We will talk about it. We will debate that because...
Tell ABBA.
We can't really agree on anything, but that's beautiful. Someone's like, hey, will you guys now be talking more Kings now that you're on a... No.
Yes, we will.
Sure, just a little.
Talk more Kings because the Kings might be good.
We might talk more Kings because Willie Cauley Stein is a Golden State Warrior. That's about as close... No, we will
absolutely... Because they could be battling for the eighth playoff spot with the Warriors.
Oh, it better be better than that. Saints and Rams, the overturn call, the fumble return overturned, heard around the world. We've got that for you today. We've got Michael Irvin at 4:30, the Hall of Famer, the playmaker, Kenny Albert, who called the Niners week one win in Tampa, who called the Steelers-Seahawks game yesterday. He's the perfect conversation to have at 5:30 this afternoon. And, man, we look forward to talking with you. 888-957-9570. Here, Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
I remember as a kid thinking, all right, that's a pop song, but there's something like really dark and creepy about it. And then when it drops right here, this is good. Of course, Phoebe Cates getting out of a pool never hurt this song either. Look it up, kids. 888-957-9570. Welcome back. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Oh, little Monster Monday. And we got, a significant development in the 49ers season here. I didn't know that they were going to be coming back 2-0. You couldn't really bet on it. I guess if you wanted to just be a goofy fanboy, you thought about it. But I thought Cincinnati showed better in Seattle. I thought that they were going to be a lot more of a significant opponent than they proved to be for the 49ers, who now have this home opener at Levi's Stadium. We talked about it might be the biggest game in a long time. Now that Ben Roethlisberger is not going to be playing, it goes from, let's see if you can go 3-0, to you better damn well go 3-0, and you better look good in front of a packed place with fans that are all about seeing a decent football team in that building. I think for the first time. I mean, the Harbaugh backslide started that offseason before they kicked off the year. You know what I mean? So this is the most significant moment of football that stadium's seen from a 49er standpoint, period.
I'll be interested to see how many people sit in the baked potato section of the ballpark. But I think being 2-0, not having the head coach and the owner at each other's throats. I mean, it's probably the first opportunity since 2013 for people to go to the ballpark and not be complaining about traffic, complaining about prices, going there saying, maybe we got a shot at seeing something worth coming back to see again.
I've said throughout this whole Levi's Stadium process, as everyone complains and about all the problems with it, it's not that those problems don't exist, because they do. They're real problems. The way you solve them is winning football, because nobody complains about the stadium if you're winning double-digit games every year and going to the playoffs. And I'm not saying this team has assured that by any means, but Ray's right. This is the first time where you complain about the stadium when you have other things to complain about, too.
And you're just piling on.
Yeah, and there's not much else to complain about right now. You got to feel really good, and I do think it's going to be the best home atmosphere since they moved into Levi's Stadium. And, boy, looking at the way the Steelers are beat up right now, you would think that would continue all the way through the end of the game.
I mean, what's it mean to be 2-0? I mean, what's it mean to be 2-0 with two road wins? That's even another question.
You're asking the wrong fan base. They know nothing of this.
Well, they haven't seen it in a real long time, that's for sure. 2-0, historically, you've got a 73% chance of seeing the postseason.
Not bad.
73% chance of postseason play is the biggest number flashing over the 49ers since Navarro Bowman's knee went boom in Seattle one night. I mean, really, this is the high watermark since the low tide that was how it ended with Harbaugh, Jim Tomsula, Chip Kelly, who's doing a bang-up job at UCLA, if I might add.
But in fairness to Chip Kelly, since you brought it up, he's got three more years after this.
That's good. It's good to see him have a little
taking
time.
His time.
Yeah.
Year three here for Shanahan and Lynch. And the question is, what does it mean to you? What would you mortgage to solve the Joe Staley problem? And look, I want today to be a positive show. You've got a lot to feel good about, but to not highlight this Joe Staley injury would be to lose focus of what really matters this week for the 49ers. I mean, they need to solve this problem as much as they need to beat Pittsburgh. They have options. The easiest, the single most, like, that would be perfect, would be, hey, Justin School, this is your life, and you were ready to meet it. Justin School, who was thrust into the role of left tackle after the injury to Staley, what if he actually can fill the bill and play it way above average to the point where Justin School is Jimmy Garoppolo's figuring it out ACL season blindside tackle? Like, doesn't sound good on paper, but in reality, if it could work, that's the simplest choice and easiest available option. Pray that they can do it. What about moving McGlinchey? You're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul right there. I mean, you don't have any issues at right tackle, basically. Now you do have issues at right tackle, and if McGlinchey isn't the bill filler at left tackle, now you got two problems instead of just one. So I don't know what that would be. Or you could just say, look, that's your left tackle of the future, and the future is now, unfortunately, and them's the apples, them's the breaks. Or you start looking for outside solutions. And if you're looking for a tackle, Trent Williams, Washington Redskins, that is not an acrimony. That's not a harmonious relationship right now. And maybe, just maybe, would you be willing to mortgage some future to get through the next 8 weeks for Garoppolo's health sake?
That depends on whether you believe you're a playoff team or not. And I don't know where Kyle Shanahan's head is on that yet. I mean, do you want to give up a ton of stuff for a chance to be a wild card team who loses in the first round? Or do you think that's the move that gets you deep into the postseason, and whether the rest of your team is ready to do that or not? I think if they don't do that, that tells you something about it. But dealing with the Washington Redskins, I'm sorry, the Washington racial slurs, is often awful. They always overvalue players. They never go into a trade wanting not to swindle the other guy, which is why nobody really likes to deal with them. And by and large, I think the 49ers have to figure out, what's the price we want to pay to save ourselves from maybe not making the playoffs? And I don't know that dealing with Washington gets you where you want to be without gutting part of your future. I think I'd pass on it.
Well, I think the question is, do you believe that the chances of Jimmy Garoppolo getting hurt go up appreciably if you just take one of those first two options, either Justin School at left tackle or McGlinchey switch and somebody else at the right? If you think either of those options dramatically increase the risk you're putting your quarterback under, that's when you make this deal. Because I think Ray's right that as good as these first 2 weeks may have been, you're not necessarily at the time in your franchise where you will cherish mortgaging future assets for an 8-week tackle. Because ideally, let's say you traded for Trent Williams, he's back to the bench when Joe Staley comes out off the injury list, whatever. Ideally, Staley will be the guy heading, if you do go to the playoffs, into the playoffs. So how much are you willing to give for an 8-week Band-Aid? I think it really is going to be tied directly to what they think it means for the quarterback.
And let's face it, the market for tackles has been set by what the Houston Texans gave to the Miami Dolphins.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, there was Kenny Stills involved in there too, but Laremy Tunstall was at least one of the two future first rounders that they had to give up. So would you be willing to give up next year's first round pick, knowing that you don't have next year's second round pick, because that's what you flipped to Kansas City for D Ford. Would you be willing to come off next year's first rounder? For again, if you just tell me it's an 8-week solution, it doesn't sound good. But if you're telling me it keeps Garoppolo upright and healthy for the foreseeable future, man, that sounds like a deal. It's hard to refuse. We are going to learn an awful lot about how aggressive Shanahan and Lynch are going to be on this. Tim Kawakami was writing about it. He basically said, look, we've been observing, we've been watching Shanahan and Lynch. How many more extra risks are they willing to take? How important do they feel this season is, not just to the Niners' development, but to their own security? And if you are more comfortable in it not defining your security, maybe you're slower to play this than you would be if you thought you had to make such a statement in 2019 that you are in a wild card game at the end of the year to save your job. I don't think these guys are there. I don't even think they're close to that.
Well, more importantly, I don't think Jed York is close to that.
Right.
The overarching thing about this injury is that if you believe it's only 8 weeks and he's going to come back as good as new, one, I don't think you're playing the odds correctly, only because guys who've played as long as he has and are out for 8 weeks, there's going to be a little bit of slippage just because of gravity.
Although leg is better for that than, say, torn ACL or ligament damage or something.
Yeah, but the other thing is, when they drafted Mike McGlinchey, the plan from the get was when Staley can't go anymore, he can play left tackle. And so it seems to me that the McGlinchey solution is the obvious one. And if you have to have only one really good tackle, you'd rather have a left tackle than a right. And I think, you know, if you believe in McGlinchey, there's no reason not to at this point because he's been very, very good. If you just say, okay, it's big boy time, you're protecting the franchise. And I see no reason to think that he wouldn't be up to that. That seems to be the obvious choice, the sensible choice, and the one that doesn't get you phone calls from Bruce Allen, which in and of itself is a good thing.
I do wonder if, and this is something we can ask Alex Boone when we have him on, what is that learning curve, if any, to go right to left tackle? I mean, it may be that it essentially is not much harder. Just got to get used to standing on the other side and he'll be fine.
And is the existence of life as a right tackle so much easier that just that will take, you know, Justin School and if he was going to be a B-, now he's a solid B+. You know, I mean, is that all it takes? Because there's a lot of good edge rushers on both sides of a lot of defensive lines. I don't know if right tackle is an easy breezy day at work compared to left tackle now in the modern NFL. Maybe used to be, but not necessarily now.
Yeah, but for a more traditional quarterback like Garoppolo, who isn't going to be running all around like Mahomes or Russell Wilson, left tackle is still more important than
right.
You
can just afford less mistakes at left tackle than right when you have a right-handed quarterback.
Yeah. If we were talking about protecting Patrick Mahomes, left tackle and right tackle are equally vital. But I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is ever going to beam up Patrick Mahomes.
No, he is not.
I don't think anybody is going to be Patrick Mahomes anytime soon.
I'm not even sure Patrick Mahomes will be that anymore.
And it's not just yesterday. This is not overreacting to recency bias. Like, this guy, like, I'm sorry, Don Majkowski, this guy's the magician. He really is. This is someone who does things with footballs that other human beings really don't do. And he has got so many throws in his bag that are plus-plus level throws. Like, if he were a pitcher, like, no pitcher has a plus-plus fastball, plus-plus curveball, plus-plus slider, plus-plus changeup. No one. That's never happened in the history of. This guy has plus-plus touch pass, plus-plus swing pass, touch, you know, intermediate, short pass, long pass, bomb pass, Hail Mary. Like, my God.
I watch him and I think this is like if Aaron Rodgers had a slightly better arm and was a better athlete, which is an incredible thing to say. I mean, that's literally what it looks like. Because I remember thinking the same stuff when Aaron Rodgers finally took over for Brett Favre. It was like, oh, man, this is a thing. This is different than most quarterbacks.
What if Brett Favre never made mistakes? It would kind of look like this.
Right. And this is like the next evolutionary step. Mahomes is like nothing I've ever seen in my life.
He can do one thing that is an incredibly bad habit for most people, but that is an actual definite need in a great quarterback's arsenal, is that he can throw where he wants off his heels. And the only other guy currently playing that I think can even come close to that is Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
Because Brady can't do it anymore. Breeze has never been able to
Rodgers, do it. Rodgers maybe not anymore, but
Rodgers could at one point,
yeah,
but that's a ways, that's a while ago. And with that offensive line in front of him, you know, that's all he's going to be doing.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the rarest skills, because you throw off your heels, you're throwing pop flies. And he doesn't do that. I mean, just when he underthrows a receiver, I mean, it's not him, it's someone else. It's an average quarterback. He could run into trouble and enhance his ability to complete the pass. That's how good he is.
I see people on the text line comparing him to Steph Curry. I heard the broadcast make
like
the comparison between what the Kansas City Chiefs are doing to the offense in the NFL as to what the Warriors did to the NBA's offense by taking the 3-point shot and embracing it like never before. Another person says, you know, imagine if the Bears had picked Mahomes and not Trubisky.
It's literally
why I almost didn't come into work today.
Don't do that to
me. And the Bears won. Shouldn't have. I think the difference between sports fans on the East Coast and West Coast and sports fans born in the middle is a Bears fan will tell you they didn't deserve to win that game and will tell you how bad they suck, where people are trying to buy into the illusion of the victory, I think, on other coasts. Like, that sucked. I'm embarrassed that the Bears won yesterday. Shame on them.
A Bears fan will spend the entire Sunday night game texting other Bears fans about how stupid it is that we won that stupid game. Ugh.
You did that too, huh?
Yeah.
But I'll say one other thing since you guys jumped off the Mahomes thing, is that if Mahomes had been drafted by the Bears, he'd be getting the living crap kicked out of him, because part of Mahomes' greatness is the fact that he has targets upon targets and one of the great offensive coaching minds of the last 50 years.
I see.
Andy Reid may look like sort of a tarpaulin covering a dumpster, but he's a great offensive mind. And if there is a flaw in his coaching, it's clock management late in games. But that's not the same as designing plays and finding players who can make a game go into the 40s faster than anybody else.
I see your point, but for a rare time in Bears history, I don't think that's true. They actually have an offensive coach and a ton of offensive weapons, and it's the quarterback who's holding them back right now.
You want to talk about...
Until they get to 20 in a game, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm the honeymoon is over with Nagy, too. Anyways, you want to talk about drawing him up. When you have the analyst screaming touchdown ahead of the play-by-play guy, that means you just drew up something special. The first touchdown of this Niner game was something special.
Touchdown, and thinking one way, roll the other. Garoppolo
touchdown.
Looking down the field and wide open, and that will be a touchdown for Marquise Goodwin. What a start for the 49ers. A 38-yard touchdown, and there was not a Bengal defender within 15 yards of Marquise Goodwin.
That was one of the most beautiful designed routes where he essentially, like, it was like a middle wide receiver screen, but it wasn't a screen play. It was basically Goodwin came out of the center guard spot as a wide receiver. I mean, it was genius. I've never quite seen anything like that.
Have you ever seen someone that open?
Well, I watch a lot of Indiana
Kansas
football.
City. In the day.
Ohio State versus Indiana. I saw it a lot.
But 15, literally, nobody within 15 yards of him when he caught that ball.
It was amazing. It really, really was. And the coach that we saw running guys open before the guys were here to make the plays is still running guys open. And now he might have the quarterback and a wide receiver or two to make a play. I mean, I don't know if any of these guys is going to establish themselves as a premier number one, he going to the Pro Bowl wide receiver. But they got a few more options than they used to have. It doesn't necessarily look like Dante Pettis is going to be one of them. But it's still a long way to go. I mean, he's got plenty of time to resurrect things, or he maybe doesn't have plenty of time to resurrect things, because here comes Debo. Here comes, you know, Jalen Hurd eventually. Here comes Trent Taylor when he gets healthy and he's back in the mix. Interesting stuff, man. Interesting stuff.
I think we can say for certain that Marquise Goodwin has set the bar for distance jumped in an end zone celebration.
Yes. I just don't want him to pull any hamstrings.
True.
Well, if he pulls his hamstring doing that, you're going to take the touchdown and go, oh, well, we'll just get another guy who's just like him.
Next man
Because
up.
That's what they've got.
Yeah.
I mean, do you that's an unfair question. I won't ask it. But the hell with it. I got to say it now. Do you think Kyle Shanahan could take DeMarcus Robinson off a waiver wire and 4 days later get 172 yards out of him?
Yeah, probably.
I'm not sure he can.
No?
Because I think as good as he is, Reed's better and Mahomes is better than Garoppolo.
Mahomes is better than Garoppolo. Well,
and
we
I
can
think,
all agree
and
on
I think
that.
Reed is better than Shanahan because he's shown it.
He's certainly more experienced.
But he's been his offense is getting better in his 20th year of coaching.
I know. It's shade to Andy Reid. It's hard to compare because the talent gap is massive.
Motion through the formation. Reed loves it. Mahomes in the gun. Going to go for it all. Got an open receiver. Touchdown, Chiefs. DeMarcus Robinson. They overpower the secondary. A mistake. They leave him wide open. And the Chiefs strike gold on the first player of the second quarter.
He really built the drama up so that he could let you down.
Yeah. I'll just say it was – look, I know it was a rough watch second quarter for Raiders fans. You're watching a better football team. 49ers fans, you don't need to be convinced of this. You know this. You're watching a better football team. We legitimately have significant steps forward for both franchises happening in front of our eyes. And if you don't realize it and recognize it in real time, and you're only one of those – the only thing that matters is the destination, not the journey – you're missing the point. You're missing this. I think roster construction and teams taking steps and graduating from incompetent to bad to now competent to now officially above average to now you're good to now you're very good to now you, it's fascinating how it comes together.
The fact that the 49ers beat the Bengals significantly worse than the Chiefs beat the Raiders is a positive for both the Niners and the Raiders. Like, you hanging with Kansas City better than the Bengals hung with the Niners, that's a small victory.
After that second quarter, I thought they were going to put 50 on you. I thought you were getting 50 burgered at home. I thought, by the way,
that totally still could have happened without some really nice calls that went against you there.
But, I mean, I really, really thought it was going to be one of those, and this one got away from them. They played with more dignity and pride in division. I saw pride. I saw pride out there. There were prideless moments last year. The 49ers, they got to be awfully proud of the situation that they're coming home in after all those days on the road in Youngstown. Man, they got to be feeling good. And although the Joe Staley injury has to sting, the Ben Roethlisberger injury has got to have you believe in 3-0 is there. 888-957-9570. We got an awful lot coming up at 3 o'clock today. Alex Boone, former 49er. We're talking offensive line, Staley, what McGlinchey would need to do to make that transition from right to left tackle. Alex Boone, a phenomenal conversation. He joins us today. We're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to you joining us as well. What'd you think? Week 2. In the books, you now know more than you did. 888-957-9570. What do you think? What do you know? What can you prove? We got that for you. A little overreaction. Monster Monday brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
I'm telling you, don't sleep on any money. He was good. He was better than I thought he would ever be live. I actually saw him live once.
Wow.
It was one of those I didn't mean to. I just stumbled into it situations. It was better than I thought it was going to be. It truly was. Respect the fallen rock stars. And These things do happen in threes. Eddie Money, Rick Ocasek, question mark. Everyone say pray for your favorite aging rock star. Could be a rough week. 888-957-9570. If you said a prayer, if you lit a candle for your favorite football team, maybe they're playing a little bit better right now. Maybe it's God. Maybe it's coaching. Maybe it's talent. I don't know. Maybe it's an actual middle linebacker making plays.
Dalton flushed out of the pocket and throws, and it's intercepted. I mean, threw it right into the hands of Quan Alexander, and that's about the third pass on this drive. That Dalton is lucky wasn't intercepted. There's a penalty flag down.
That was a call on Fox. Quan Alexander, we didn't really see him in week one. He got ejected so early. This guy plays with his hair on fire. Quan Alexander is sideline to sideline really fast for a guy coming off an ACL. What's it going to look like when he's healthy all the way back? I mean, you're telling me he's going to get even better next year? Okay.
One of the things about Quan we heard coming in was, he's going to miss tackles, and you see why. But he hits everything.
Right. Heat-seeking missile.
He's gonna hit some and bounce off here and there, but he impacts almost every play. He's a ton of fun to watch. And Fred Warner, incredibly sound as well. This defense, it doesn't look like it has a weakness through 2 weeks. Now, that may be the opponents as much as anything, but so far, that's what it looks like.
There's nothing to quibble about here because there's no evidence to suggest that you should.
Right.
But there's still tons of time to figure out where the weaknesses are because every defense has them in this era of football. But after two games, they shouldn't have to practice. They should have the week off.
Like, the secondary is going to be a work in progress. I think we all know that. But the defensive line has been so upgraded. The speed in the middle of this defense, just based on Quan Alexander and Fred Warner, it's amazing what NFL talent does for an NFL team. 888-957-9570. We got a lot of lines, a lot of fans to talk to. We'll begin with Jerry in Hercules. Hello, Jerry.
What's up, fellas? I called in on Friday. I was excited. I'm even more excited now. I have mentioned Juszczyk. I mentioned Goodwin, and those were the first two weapons we used in our arsenal to start off in Cincinnati. It was awesome. I think we have the players that are going to complement Shanahan's playbook. Richie James, Juszczyk, who could catch with the best of them, aside from Kittle, Goodwin, Debo. They're going to make Shanahan look like the offensive wizard that he is. And to complement that defense, that middle, I'm going to piggyback off what you guys said, the middle, the core, Greenlaw, Warner, and Quan Alexander, they're going to make that secondary in the back eat all day along with the fellas up front. They're really growing up, man. Debo.
Oh, sorry, you're right, man. They were looking fantastic at all levels, kind of on both sides of the ball at times. I mean, I haven't seen them play that well throughout an entire football game in years. Like, I'm not overreacting. It's been half a decade since I've seen the Niners play that well under any circumstances. Don't give me, well, the opponent sucked. Look, it didn't matter if the opponent sucked. You still didn't get that in the past.
That's right. They've played plenty of garbage opponents over the last 3 or 4 years, and we have not seen any performances of that level.
Right. In fairness, most of the time they were the garbage opponent.
Totally. And all that, well, you know, that 5-0 run from Jimmy Garoppolo, totally disposable. Those teams weren't even trying. If that wasn't good enough for you, well, you know, the Bengals were trying.
Eventually, you got to count the wins, man.
No, I mean, yeah, at some point, I mean, Bill Belichick or Bill Parcells is always right. You are what the standings say you are. And right now, they're 2-0.
So,
I mean, in 6 weeks, they could be 4-3.
Sure.
But, you know, 2-0 is better than 1-1, and it's a lot better than 0-2. So, you know, if you want to try to find reasons to dog them now, go ahead. I'm less excited about them than either of you are or most 49er fans are, but 2-0 is not disputable.
Well, and got a guy here who says, you know, it's fool's gold. Bengals defense ranked 32nd last year. Give me a break. I don't know. Were they ranked 32nd last year? I'd have to look
34th.
That up.
Depends on the ranking system you choose.
Yeah,
but whatever.
Yeah, whatever you want to use. I'm sure they sucked. They're the Bengals, for goodness sakes. And it finally got Marvin Lewis fired. So I won't even bother looking that up. Matt, you don't have to. Ray, you don't have to. I'll accept your text as canon fact. in the history of the Cincinnati Bengals, which is full of bad football. That's the worst home beating the Bengals ever took in a home opener in the history of the franchise. Again, that says something. There's been a lot of bad seasons of Bengals football, and this might be another one. But they never got clocked and punched in the mouth like that in their first home game. Not never, not ever.
And for what it's worth, by DVOA, which is a an advanced metric for football ranking offenses and defenses, 13th. Cincinnati's
he told you not to look it
year.
Up.
Yeah, but I
he
felt like 32nd
you.
Was pretty far off.
It did.
Their offense was worse than their defense last year, for what that's worth.
Yeah. No, they were still...
They're not good.
They're not good.
No one's saying the Bengals
and
are good, I assure you.
And all the people who spend a lot of time crunching numbers in the offseason said they were going to be materially worse.
If all you're doing is counting down the time it's going to take to beat a team that you acknowledge is good enough to be bragging about beating, it might be a while. Look, we got an awfully big Monday Night Football game tonight. And if the Cleveland Browns lose tonight,
then I'm expecting 4-0.
Everyone's going to downgrade what that Monday Night Football game is going to look like. And the Steelers obviously are going to be without Ben Roethlisberger, so you're not going to be impressed by that.
Hopefully,
you are completely unimpressed with a 4-0 record.
Exactly.
That'd be great to be unimpressed by 4-0, wouldn't it?
That's exactly right. If you can get to 4-0 without doing anything impressive, congratulations, you're 4-0. That's what matters in that scenario, the fact that you're 4-0. And frankly, if I don't see something from the Browns tonight, that's my expectation. Because when you look the way they looked yesterday, I expect you to win your home opener against a team with a quarterback making his first career start.
The way that they looked yesterday, I think a lot of people would have expected them to beat future Hall of Famer Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah. The way the Steelers played with Roethlisberger, I think I would have. But certainly now.
This is Jason on the Bay Bridge. What's up, Jay?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just want to say that and share that I'm very excited about how the Niners have played in the first 2 weeks of the season. Defense was on display in week one, and the play-action clinic was on display in week two. And just looking at the way they played in the first 2 weeks and now looking at their schedule and how the teams on their schedule have played, I'm not surprised if this team is at minimum on paper already a 10-win team. If I can get your opinion on that, guys, I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Yeah, the reason why I'm not just going to jump on and say yes or no is because, I thought the Saints looked like a possible playoff team that was going to ride a week one thrilling comeback all the way to competency in the regular season, and then Drew Brees got hurt, and all bets are off. I mean, there's way too much football to be played to talk about the 8 more games you can already pencil in as W's.
I would take it in an even more extreme direction than that. I believe this team could go 10-0 and still finish 10-6.
Yeah, yes.
So because here's your last 6 games. Host the Packers, which Packers 11-24. That team looks really good so far. At Ravens, they look great so far. At Saints, they look pretty good and should have Drew Brees back by then. Hosting the Falcons, who beat the Eagles last night. Hosting the Rams, who are also 2-0 and one of the better teams in the league. And then at the Seahawks to end the season. It is an absolute gauntlet down the stretch for this team. So by no means would I guarantee 10 wins. Not by any means. But I'm a lot closer to picturing 10 wins than I was 3 days ago.
Absolutely. I can see it in my mind's eye. I'm not going to start bragging about it. Richard Sherman's even saying, hey, everyone, stay humble.
Thank you to the Niner faithful. Like I said earlier in the year, just stay humble. You know, I know everybody's out there probably going crazy at the bar and having a good time. And all my friends and family and my boy Deezy's probably out. You know, Niner gang, or beat Marquise. But everybody just stay humble. You know, this is a franchise that won 5 championships. We're trying to get back to that. And we're working hard, and it's a work in progress. But we appreciate you. Thank you.
There you go. Stay humble and thank you. This is Derek calling from Richmond. What's going on, Derek?
Hey, man. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
You know, I'm happy for the 49ers, but we know that 2-0 ain't real. Beat Baltimore, beat Kansas City like that, and then I'll put down the crack pipe and the meth like everybody else is dealing with.
That's good. That's good. We suggest you put those down.
Yeah, probably stop that.
Regardless of result.
Yeah.
Yes. The first huge test is probably at St. Louis, probably at L.A. on the 13th of October, right? I mean, the Browns could be pretty good, but given the state of the Steelers, given that the Browns are probably not what everyone had them cracked up to be, two very winnable games. If you go to Los Angeles and beat the Rams, that's when even the doubters will have to be impressed.
The lesson here is that there's one team out of 32 that after 2 weeks you can go, those guys are unbelievable. And that's the Patriots.
Yep.
Everybody else is in play because Baltimore did not look good against Arizona yesterday. I mean, they struggled. I mean, Kyler Murray carved them up. I'm not ready to say that Kyler Murray is the next great thing in quarterbacking yet because it's only been two games. So other than the Patriots and on the other end, Miami, everybody in this is in this giant mess, and you'll find out more about them in 3 weeks if you can wait that long. Fortunately, most people can't.
By the way, Ray is dressed head to toe in Miami Dolphins gear today. They are his favorite team now in the NFL.
Yeah, except for the fact that I'm wearing a Hartford Whalers cap, which by definition makes me hipster cool, and a green shirt, which they
don't. To match the hat.
Yeah. Well, no, because it's top of the hamper. And a pair of nondescript pants. So, no. I mean, I want the Dolphins to be awful. I want them to be record-setting awful. I want them I want their point differential at the end of the year to be minus 700.
Way to play along with the illusion, Ray, as we move into our 3 o'clock hour.
You can't slander me.